Ed Tour Guides. I'm Carrie.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Bree.
Today we are taking you on a tour of Tel Aviv. I've never been. My parents were supposed to go in May as part of our church group stuff. Aw, I don't know if
guys, I
can hear
that. Got a new kitten for my birthday. Her name is Prue.
And she really wants to be in here with us.
She really wants to be in here. So you will hear tiny little Devon Rex baby kitty meows.
You'll get to see a picture of her on the Insta because she got up on the wine bottle.
She's perfect, but also very loud. So yes. We're sorry about that. But also, you're welcome because you get to hear kitten content. So,
yeah. Don't worry, she's not in pain. She's fine. Aw, baby. What? But yeah, so I've never been. I want to go. Seems like a cool place to go. Lots of history.
Yeah, I've never been to Israel at all. I know a lot of people who've gone. Bree, what is your Israel connection?
I have never been. I would like to go, especially after doing the research on the history and stuff. It sounds really cool. It's got really interesting historical background, and the culture and stuff sounds really cool. So that would be a nice little trip there.
Yeah, well, I also really want to go because they have really good Israeli wines, which is what we'll be talking about. So my first taste of Israeli wine was actually in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Interesting.
There's a little cellar down there called Mendelbaum, and they have Israeli wines and oils. And so I got some olive oil from there, and we bought a bottle of...
loves olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's my Italian roots, but like, I fucking love olive oil, guys.
It's so good. And it was expensive for what I bought, but top quality. But yeah, so they have Texas wines and Israeli wines, and so we bought one of the Israeli wines. It's a sweet wine, but we still haven't drank it yet, and we went like 2-3 years ago. So we probably need to drink it, because sweets don't stay
that long.
Yeah. Whoops.
Oh no.
Oh no. I have to drink wine. Yeah, so...
Oh, you know what wine's good for? The holidays! Happy holidays!
Happy holidays.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about all the religions.
Yes,
and
we are.
Things, and I'm making a Yule log so we can get some Wiccan and paganism in there. Yeah. We got it all. We're all here for you. We just like to party.
I got a little paganism in mind. You know, I get to talk about Catholics. It's great.
Perfect.
Yeah. But just like everywhere else, Israel has its wine regions. And so Tel Aviv is in the coastal plain region, but I couldn't find any wines from there. Because it's kind of a niche thing.
Yeah.
I also wanted to make sure that it was kosher because we're currently recording this in Hanukkah and we kosher up in this bitch.
Matzah tov.
Tov? What?
Matzah tov.
Anyway, so at my local Total Wine, they only had things from the Galilee region. So we're drinking from the Northern Galilee region.
L'chaim.
The coastal plain around Tel Aviv is located... Prue is very passionate about this.
She loves the coastal plain region.
Yes. But it was the first commercial operation in Israel. In 2010, they discovered deep cellars containing some pretty dang old wines.
Old fashioned.
It didn't say how old they were in my book, but it's fine. The Galilee region, where our vineyard is located, also goes back to biblical times and is responsible for 27% of Israel's growing area. So there's an amazing book that I read a couple years ago called The History of the World in Six Wines. Not Six Wines. I've had like 3 sips of my wine. A History of the World in Six Glasses.
Oh yeah, we've talked about this.
We have.
Yeah.
Because I really like it.
Because I really want to read it.
It's so good.
I love books.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it talked about how wine was a staple in early days because it purified the water and it killed the bacteria.
Because they liked to get lit.
Well, they watered it down, so it was more like every...
Grog.
Kinda, yeah. Mm. Because the wine itself wasn't as strong, and then they would mix it half wine, half water, and they'd have these huge basins that they would make up, so that way people would have safe drinking water.
Yeah, because you could not drink water back in the day.
Oh, no.
No.
You die.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was rough.
There are all sorts of parasites and mm-hmm. things growing and floating and ugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just thought I'd throw that little nugget in there because I thought it was interesting. So the northern growing region in Galilee are more promising for grapes because of the sea breezes cooling down the vineyards. So it doesn't get quite as...
That sounds very charming.
Right? And there's some beautiful pictures. There's a link in my notes that has pictures and
so I actually
it's beautiful.
Learned a lot about like the horticulture of Israel when I was doing my research for food. And I was like, wow, what beautiful aromatic plants that you have growing here. And then several corpses were found. And, like, one was in an avocado orchard. One was in a eucalyptus orchard. And I was like, a grove. I was like, oh my gosh. I was thinking of all these idyllic, beautiful produce growing areas and how good it must smell. And then there's just corpses. And I'm upset.
Fertilizer. The best fertilizer.
Well, he was like a horrible rapist serial killer, so...
Oh, you know.
Not great. But we'll get to that later. But I literally was thinking about, like, wow, all this beautiful horticulture. And I was like, there's vineyards and orchards and all these aromatic plants. And then now there's a corpse in my idyllic picture in my mind. And I was upset.
I can't remember if I was listening to a podcast where we were talking about someone burying bodies in a vineyard or if there was actually, like, a thing. But that sounded really familiar. Anyway, tonight we have a white blend and a red blend. I picked these two because the grapes used in the blends are the most popularly grown grapes. Granted, they're the most popularly grown grapes in the world, so that doesn't really say a whole lot. The grapes themselves come from very different regions. For the white blend, 70% Sauvignon Blanc, 30% Chardonnay, and the Sauv Blanc grapes come from the north in the Galilee region. It didn't say where the Chardonnay grapes were from, so... there's that.
Let's say Tel Aviv. Just
sure.
They're
from smack dab in the middle of the city.
They're urban rooftop vineyards.
Yes. You know. In the middle of the white city. What is it? The white?
The white city.
Yeah, okay.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah. But the red blend is Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, being split equally in both from central Israel, just east of Jerusalem. So as I said earlier, these are kosher wines because Israel.
Happy Hanukkah, guys.
Happy Hanukkah. We're recording this right in the middle of Hanukkah?
Yep.
Well, close to the beginning-ish.
Six more nights to go, am I right?
Heyo.
I am not Jewish, but I grew up in a heavily Jewish area, and so I've done quite a few Hanukkah shindigs. Mm-hmm. Used to sing a lot of songs in Hebrew. Very fun.
I make my kids sing songs in Hebrew because we
culture. It's a beautiful language.
It is.
I told Carrie she had to sing me the dreidel song.
I have a little dreidel, I made it out of clay. When it's dry and ready, then dreidel I shall play. Oh, dreidel, 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 I made it out of clay. Oh, dreidel, 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 oh, dreidel I shall play.
We'll talk later about other things that they make out of clay.
Heyo!
Yeah, baby!
Oh, bro!
I've also took like a Jewish literature course in college, and I read a lot. Mm-hmm. And I read My Name is Asher Lev in high school, and that book, like, really stuck with me. I'm, like, still upset about that book. That book was sad.
Well, you know what I'm not upset about? This wine pairing with hummus.
Yeah, I we literally, I took it, I was like, ooh, if it's a white wine, I bet she's gonna be good with this food. So, speaking of hummus. Okay, so first of all, there's this whole comedy sketch. There's, like, a bunch of punchlines about how much lesbians love hummus and about, and, like, yes. So here's the thing. Hummus is a perfect food, and you can put it on anything, and you can flavor it with anything, and you can make it healthy or unhealthy, and that is the true beauty of a good dip. And I love hummus. So we had some hummus, just traditional chickpea, tahini, lemon, garlic hummus, which is... okay, I'm going to do a disclaimer. This is for the whole episode, but especially for the food.
Not do that into the microphone.
I'm talking about Israeli-Palestinian relations, okay, Nita? This is important. So, I am stressed enough about the politics of my own country. We are not talking about politics. Both countries and cultures have claims to the foods I am talking about today. I am talking about them from an Israeli standpoint because that is what we are doing. But if you are Palestinian and you claim these foods, they're delicious and we love them regardless. So that's just a PSA for today because everything I read was like, it's very tense about the food claims. And both Palestine and Israel claim falafel as their national dish, which is actually what we had as our main course. So technically it's a metze, just like hummus, which is like a small appetizer as part of a tray. Which is the best way to go in general. Mm-hmm. This was actually a vegan meal for us as well.
Yeah.
So we did falafel.
Nita is all over Catherine
right now. And hummus. And I made a fresh Israeli salad, which is delicious. It's cucumbers, mint, parsley, red onion, garlic, lemon, and olive oil. And yeah, mix it all together. And it's like a very fresh salad. And It was a really, like, light, delicious meal, and it's, like, almost freezing and pouring today mm-hmm. in Texas, so it was a nice, light dinner that does not go well with the weather, but it does go well with our wine.
Yes, it does. Yeah. But you know what will go really nicely with this terrible weather? The red blend.
That's true. That's mm-hmm. true.
But, so we got the food pairing. We got the weather pairing. It's going to be great.
Ready to go. But yeah, so I love hummus. I also love falafel. And well-made falafel doesn't require any flour. So it's naturally gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And I love cucumbers. So the salad was really delicious. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a pretty little meal with a lot of chickpeas. And I'm always down for a good chickpea dish. And I was explaining it to my husband, and I was like, this is crunchy chickpea, this is smushy chickpea. And I'm like, they have very similar ingredients, but they're very different foods. Mm-hmm. And you can dip one in the other, but they're the same, but also different. And that is my story of falafel versus hummus. so, yeah, delicious. I didn't have to cook much tonight. It was really chill. Basically just chopped up some vegetables. And, yeah. Pretty happy. Pretty mm-hmm. content.
It was good.
Happy as a clam.
Mm-hmm.
So, disclaimer to her disclaimer. I don't think we have any political shit in this tonight. I don't really remember.
I meant this food has been politicized, so I just wanted to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, so to I'm be fair, what hasn't history? Been politicized? Because apparently now our health is political, so, you know.
Yeah. So I said, I gotta focus on mm-hmm. our current situation, and then I can... It's a whole thing.
Yeah. So.
We love all of our listeners yes. of various ethnic groups and religious affiliations.
However.
And all we care about is your food and alcohol offerings. So.
Yes. That.
Okay. So, history. I don't think we touched on anything, but just throwing that out there. I don't remember. And it's history, so it's not like I'm.
Oh,
history
is always a train wreck. Don't worry. Yeah. We expect history to be filled with terrible, terrible trauma.
Oh, yeah.
But food people are terrible. Have trauma. Food is the opposite of trauma.
I think I mostly kept it nice and somewhat light this round.
We don't have to be nice.
Just like an Israeli salad. Maybe. Nice and light.
Just like I wish I was.
Anyway. Oh, no. I could eat Israeli salad every day and still not be light.
Same.
All right. So Tel Aviv, a.k.a. the White City, as Carrie mentioned, was founded in early April of 1909 when dozens of families came together to create a new neighborhood known then as, oh, and I'm going to fuck all of this up, super sorry, you already know it, Ahuzat Bayit, which I guess meant homestead.
Yeet.
What?
Yeet.
Yeet. Which later came to be known as Tel Aviv.
The city of Yeet.
So... The families allocated plots of land on the sand dunes of the beach outside of Yafo, which meant the beautiful, and they held a lottery to figure out how to divvy up the land fairly, and every time I hear lottery, I think of that horrifying short that we read in middle school or high school.
It's incredible. It's such a well-written story.
It is so good.
Gosh, that plot twist at the end, little Catherine was like, bruh!
Right?
I remember reading it. I was like a GT class, and I was in like second grade, and we were reading it, and I remember getting to the last paragraph and me being like, like, I remember, like, having a full-on, like, physical reaction to that short story. And you'll need to send this to me,
because I was denied any sort of literature growing up, so.
Oh.
I think we read it in middle school. It could have been high school. I don't remember, but.
It's a short story. It's beautiful.
Yes.
See, I was denied all of it.
That's sad.
They actually made a play based off of it that I would, it's not the quality of writing that I would need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But one day, maybe.
But send me the story. I want to read it.
Okay.
Yeah, it is really good. But no worries, y'all. No one's... Well...
They were like hippie commune lottery, not like Jackson.
Yeah,
lottery.
I was going to say, no one's going to get this here, but I would ruin it for you, so...
Mm-hmm.
Never mind.
And I'm sure someone did at some point.
Probably. But it wasn't in this
It's
bit.
An old plot of land. Oh, for yeah. sure it happened at some point.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, prior to... So, in my research, I found that they actually saved up and all this other shit and bought it from the Ottoman Empire. So.
Oh, you know.
The Sultan's like, you want these dunes? I'll give you these dunes. How much are you going to pay me for these dunes? Right. I don't know why he's like,
these are some nice dunes.
Okay, so, it's not like that lottery. At least not in this portion of the story. Anyway, So, in the story, one of the big kahunas of the founding of Tel Aviv, who also happened to be chairman of the lottery committee, your pause and my one, Akiva Arye Weiss, I don't know, got together 132 Janet. Seashells, half gray and half white, and he wrote the plot numbers on the gray shells and the names of each family on the white, and then he matched each gray with the white to match the families with their plots of land. So,
that sounds far too poetic to be real.
Yeah. I don't know.
My God. This is the story. Use a sheet of paper like everyone else.
Seashells.
So the city was officially named Tel Aviv in 1910 after a verse in Ezekiel 3:15, and the city's flag includes a verse from Jeremiah 31:4. Tel Aviv was founded and built as a symbol of a combination of a fulfillment of prophecies from the Bible of the return to Zion and a Jewish Renaissance. What you have to understand is at this time there was what was referred to as the second Aliyah, I don't fucking know. And this was a huge wave of Jewish immigrants.
Oh, yeah. When everyone...
There was a shit ton.
Jewish people from other countries all moved back to Israel.
Oh, no. That comes later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can't remember if it's Yaffa or Jaffa, but...
Probably Yaffa.
I would think so. It was one of the oldest port cities in the world, and it had become overpopulated, and a lot of the immigrants coming in wanted to build something of their own that reminded them of the home that they'd left behind, and many of them were originally...
The home I love.
Middle-class European.
Also Jewish. Uh-huh. But very American fake Jewish, but also real Jewish, because half of Broadway is Jewish, but... Yeah.
You know.
So these immigrants decided to take Yaffa and modernize it. What the fuck? I can't. Build their own Yaffa-like suburb. So in 1925, Sir Patrick Geddes, a Scottish urban planner, was invited to present his ideas for the building of Tel Aviv. Like the founders, Geddes also envisioned Tel Aviv as this garden city with lush vegetation, and areas for people to take a stroll and socialize, much, I imagine, like London's Hyde Park. With that being said, a clear separation between these park areas and the bustle of the main streets was a significant feature of Geddes' plan. And between 1932 to 36, oh my God, stop fucking with my wine!
So this is a young city. This is like America young.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was founded in 1909.
Yeah.
1932 to 36, there was another population boom as Jews fled the persecution in Europe and nearly tripled Tel Aviv's population. It was also during this time, the fifth Aliyah, in 1934, that Tel Aviv was declared a city and got its first mayor, Meir Dizengoff. I don't fucking know. Also, along with this population increase came a new style of architecture referred to as the Bauhaus, aka modern movement, which was adapted from Germany's Bauhaus School of Art and Design.
I was like, that's a German.
And the climate/culture of Tel Aviv, as many of the refugees were once again European, and their architects, therefore, had been trained in the style. The style is known for its clean lines and functionality, and there are over 4,000 buildings in the style in Tel Aviv.
German engineering.
Mm-hmm.
This architectural style earned Tel Aviv its nickname of the White City and helped it to become a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2004. There are around 1,500 buildings marked for historic conservation, I'm pretty sure. Actually,
the buildings don't talk to each other, Bree?
You never know.
Have a chat with the building?
They might.
I'd like to talk to you about history.
I feel like this is like that rap battle shit that we play. Buildings be talking to each other and shit.
I'm honestly surprised I'm good at that.
I am not good at it.
Mm-hmm. I won one time and I didn't type in a single answer.
Hey, there you go.
No, I typed in one answer, actually. Anyway, so the 30s were all around poppin' in Tel Aviv because it was also during this time that it became the center of Hebrew culture, the biggest economic center in the country, and it had this cool international vibe that drew people in with, like, concert halls and cultural and social institutions, cafes and nightclubs. But while it was killing it in the 30s, things didn't stay all that great. Refugees fled to Tel Aviv before, as we discussed now. They were
during World War One
from Tel Aviv.
Okay.
It became a major scene in the conflict between Arabs and Jews at the beginning of the war in 1948. Oof. And then in the spring of 1950, Tel Aviv and Yaffa were merged into one city, Tel Aviv-Yaffo. In the decades to come, Tel Aviv-Yaffo was seen as the economic and cultural center of the country, but it didn't seem to have the same life that it once had. Then in the 80s, the city's population began moving back in, and that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And with them came an updated look for the city, and I think we would like this. Mm-hmm. From the clean, modern lines of the past to a more edgy urban vibe mixed with a kind of chill Mediterranean seaside kind of feel. Yeah. The city evolved and continues to do so like its people. Okay, so here's a neat little biblical backstory tie-in that Carrie might like. Yaffa, or Yaffo, comes from the word Yafet, which is supposed to be after one of Noah's sons, since he built the port city after the flood, and that's flood with a big F.
Japheth?
The flood.
Sure, I don't know how to say it. I suck at churching.
Hey. I know it from Children of Eden, the off-Broadway musical written by Stephen Schwartz. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. The music is so good.
So that guy, Noah's Ark kind of shit. And so the port was a gateway used during King Solomon's time to bring in cedar to build the first temple, and it was mentioned in the Old Testament, because it said that this was the port that Jonah the prophet set out from when he took to the water and ended up getting swallowed by a big ass fish.
Pinocchio!
No, what's that song? Isn't there a song that's like, Jonah, Jonah, Jonah in the belly of the whale? Whale.
What?
Or some shit.
Probably. It sounds like a Sunday school song.
As someone who grew up in cheesy ass Sunday school, what?
I'm pretty sure it's a thing. Okay.
I've heard some There's weird church song. Thing.
That's probably where I got it.
That's weird. I watch
VeggieTales. Watch VeggieTales all the time when we were little.
Yeah.
Church life.
Oh, where is my hairbrush?
I did not watch VeggieTales until hairbrush? I was in middle school, and I watched it ironically. But I also love it. That was not something about like my childhood. Like, I don't have any nostalgia to it. I just had to go see the pirates who don't do anything, because pirates.
We are the pirates who don't do anything. We stay at home and lie around.
Okay, thanks to see.
If you ask us,
Habima National Theater is excellent, and the
we don't do anything.
Israel Philharmonic Orchestra is supposed to be world class. Mm-hmm. There's a Museum of the Diaspora. I think it's Beth. Nope, can't say it. Just the Museum of the Diaspora on the campus of Tel Aviv University. And it's got the history of Jewish people for, like, more than 2,500 years.
Cool. Yeah, they as a people, have been here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got, like, a shit ton of awesome-ass museums that document it, too. Like, in really cool ways. There's the Palmach Museum. I don't know. But you follow... Oh, it's, like, an interactive, I think.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
I think, if I understood it correctly. But you follow, like, a group of Palmachniks.
What was that?
Shut up. And they talk about their experiences during the fight for independence.
Oh.
Ezreeli Tower. It's the tallest building. It's 614 feet. And I guess the tallest in the country is Migdal Shar Ayir. That's 801 feet, so I think it's like the second tallest in the country, I don't know.
There you go.
But it's the tallest in Tel Aviv, so there you go. There are a bunch of like cool shopping centers and cafes and like
love a cafe.
Nightclubs and stuff like that, so check it out. But that's all I got for history. Gonna be a short one.
Yep.
That's okay. We have wine.
We do have wine.
For lore, I read this article. It's called Of Monsters and Mention, a Typology of Jewish Monsters by Joella Jacobs.
Oh, bro. We gotta breathe on this play. See what happens.
It was actually an interesting article. So she mentions how the Latin root of monstrum, so monsters equal like warning signs, they're ominous and shit like that.
Uh-huh.
And she discusses Jeffrey Jerome Cohen's 7 theses from his studies on medieval lit, where he addresses how monsters are symbolic of our fears and desires as a culture and serve as a sort of personal warning for/against ourselves. So we are the monsters. They are cultural representations of us and the parts of ourselves that we need to be warned about. So there's this quote, and it was, the opposite of a monster would be a human, a mensch, both in its German root of human being and its Yiddish meaning of a good person. Drawing on a similar understanding of monstrosity and human morality, Friedrich Nietzsche, I don't know how to say his first name, I have only ever heard his last name, therefore famously cautioned, whoever fights monsters should see to it that in the process he does not become a monster. Yet the distinction between monster and mensch is not always as clear. As Cohen has shown, monstrosity emerges from our fears and desires, from the midst of human culture. Therefore, engaging with monstrosity requires us to look beyond the different and impossible and instead focus on the familiar to identify the fears and desires within human nature that give rise to the monstrous.
Interesting.
It was a really interesting article.
I mean, it sounds like it.
There's a golem in Supernatural one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
There's also, in that Jewish lit book, I read a book, it was like about comic book creators.
Uh-huh.
Like, graphic novel creators. And he, like, grew up Jewish, and it would, like, switch back to, like, a childhood story of a little boy, like, creating a golem. And I can't remember what it's called, but it's a really cool, like, superhero cover.
I know what you're talking about.
I read that in that Jewish literature. Well, like, American Jewish literature. Yeah.
I can't remember, but I do know what you're talking about.
It's something and something, and it's, like, graphic novel-y on the front. Can't remember what it's called. It's on my bookshelf, but that's where I learned a lot about it.
Hmm.
And also, Gollum is named after the golem.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'll talk more about the golem in a minute. So there are also vampires. So in her article, she describes that vampires as portrayals of, quote-unquote, the Jew as monster, as opposed to the golem and the Dybbuk, which we'll talk about in a minute, which are viewed as, quote-unquote, Jewish monsters, as in those that might protect the Jewish community or haunt Jewish culture. So she points out the comparisons between vampires as blood-sucking parasites and the stereotypes involving anti-Semitic sentiments and accusations of what she refers to as blood libel. So it's used to portray Jews as threats to others.
That's in that book, Christians.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And there's more, like, Solomon's vampire and stuff, but I didn't address that here.
Yeah.
The Dybbuk, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but they possess people out of revenge or a form of punishment. Mm-hmm. They're referred to in the Kabbalah as evil spirit, and the word in Hebrew that Dybbuk is based on is apparently also used to describe the cleaving of a pious soul to God. So the two are meant to, like, mirror each other.
To be together, yeah.
Yeah. They were originally thought of as a demon or some kind of devil that possessed the bodies of sick people, but another version says that they're the spirits of the dead who weren't able to pass over or find peace because their sins were so great, so they became demons, and it sounds like they possessed living people as a sort of refuge from the cold, so to speak, because they were essentially naked spirits.
Well, and I know that there's a Dybbuk box.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're...
Oh, there was a lot with Dybbuks that I didn't even get to, because there's a whole hell of
a... There's a whole lot of lore behind them. Yeah.
And you can, like, release them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did. I didn't look into it any further. I literally saw, like, a line mention it, and I did not look into it any further.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of them on lists of, like, haunted objects.
Uh-huh.
Like, Dybbuk boxes at different museums, like, here in America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That are based, like, that Jewish have immigrants some... brought in mm-hmm. that are haunted.
And allegedly have some, like, really, really powerful, dangerous spirits in them.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Which is interesting because the Torah does not have anything to do with spirits. It's all monsters. And I was going to talk about that a little bit with mine because I actually couldn't stay in Tel Aviv for mine because there was nothing mentioning spirits or, like, supernatural hauntings of any sort. It was literally just monsters.
Hmm.
So I thought that was an interesting cultural aspect.
Yeah.
So.
That they're mostly corporeal.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, I know this mentioned it as, like, an evil spirit, but...
Well, I know they believe in demons, because that mentions it in the Bible of cleansing the demons.
Well, and in some versions, they are demons, but they... Even then, they said a lot of times it was, like, demons cleaving themselves to the spirits that were unable to pass on and then possessing a human or something like that. I mean, there were two different iterations.
Yeah.
That was one of them. But a person allegedly had to commit some kind of secret sin to allow the Dybbuk entrance. Mm. And some define these creatures and or the possession as an evil pregnancy. The translation's kind of weird, so it's hard to tell, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was the eBay. So it was a wine cabinet.
Yes! That's what it was.
And someone sold it on eBay. He was a writer, creative professional by trade, owned small antiques in Portland. He bought it in an estate sale, belonged to a survivor of the Holocaust in Poland named Havela, who escaped to Spain, purchased it, and emigrated to the United States. He gave it back, but his granddaughter insisted that they take it, saying the family didn't want him. He found it to contain some stuff, a lock of hair, blonde hair bound with a cord, a lock of brown hair bound with a cord, a small statue with the word Shalom, a golden wine goblet, a dried rosebud, a single candle holder with four octopus-shaped legs, and two 1920s pennies.
This was dead-ass an episode of, like, Supernatural or Sherlock Holmes or fucking Doctor Who or something.
And apparently smells like cat urine or jasmine flowers.
Mm-hmm.
One smells Those two go together. Better than the other.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's interesting because apparently Satan doesn't play a major role in Kabbalistic mythology, so it's actually the demons that people need to fear the most. And the demons had to be exorcised and sent back to the Sitra Ara, the other side, obviously, And there are apparently tons of published testimonials involving these possessions and exorcisms. Sadly, it's said that many of these cases of possession were people who suffered from certain mental illnesses. Again, as usually
as it goes.
Is. Yeah. I also read something about how the Dybbuk possessed women more than men, of course, female hysteria and all that shit. And the Dybbuk is often depicted as a male penetrating the woman's body, which is supposed to be sexual, obviously.
Fucking patriarchy.
But also, again, penetrating, it's clearly sexual. Yeah,
but also show the opposites mirroring each other, like the meanings of the word Dybbuk. Christianity's version of this would be the belief in and persecution of witches.
Yeah.
So it was like the same time period. They were like,
bro,
100,000.
Lay off the ladies, okay? 000,
I don't know. Leave us alone. Gosh. Fucking patriarchy.
Yeah, man. So, it's not witches, it's Dybbuks. Right? Leave us alone.
Oh, man.
It also talked about the ritual of exorcism.
Cool.
Rough,
but cool.
Yeah, that is rough.
It's a big quote, because I'm just going to quote it, because fuck it. Go see someone else.
Aw, Anita!
I'm trying to do something, and she's sitting on my arm. Okay,
baby, but come
a
here.
Dramatic, terrifying ritual was required to force the reluctant spirit out of the body in which it was squatting. The ceremony was conducted in the synagogue in the presence of 10 men who had purified themselves through fasting and ritual immersion.
I don't want to be in a room with 10 men ever.
Mm-mm.
They would all dress in the white shrouds in which a corpse is buried, wreathed in prayer shawls, their heads and arms bound with the sacred parchments worn in daily prayer. The exorcist would address the Dybbuk directly, listing the offenses that the soul had committed during its human life, which might include apostasy, talebearing, suicide, murder, or ritually deviant conduct. The exorcist would both cajole and threaten the Dybbuk. With the Dybbuk fully cognizant of the trouble it was in and the appeal to its better nature concluded, the ark in the synagogue containing the scrolls of the Torah was opened. 7 scrolls were removed, 7 blasts were blown on the 7 ram's horns, and 7 black candles lit. That's my vibe. Curses, sorry.
What up, black candles?
Sorry, that bit wasn't part of the photo.
I forgot ram horns are important in Jewish, like, religious ceremonies.
Curses were proclaimed, incantations recited, and 7 different combinations of the 42-letter name of God pronounced. The Safed Kabbalist, whatever, Chaim Vital recorded instructions received from his teacher Isaac Luria for expelling a Dybbuk. It was imperative that the exorcist remain strong-hearted, displaying no fear. The spirit was to leave the body only between the big toe and its nail. Any other exit route might cause permanent damage to the possessed person.
I hate that. I hate that.
That sounds terrible.
I hate that. Oh my god, my leg feels all tingly and
We'll come back to that.
Leave my toenail out of this.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, that comes up in my story.
I don't like toenails. That's disgusting. I mean, I'm glad they don't want to hurt the person, that's gross.
One of the main reasons I wanted to quote this was because, one, I wanted to be like, it's a very specific ritual.
Right.
So I didn't want to fuck any of it up, but I really wanted to talk about how they specifically said it had to come out between the big toe and the nail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so crucially, the spirit was to be warned with threats and imprecations against entering anybody else. There's no place for the world of the dead and the abode of the living. End quote. And that is the Dybbuk.
Woo!
So now we talk about the golem. Golem means a man of clay. They're magically animated mud monsters that are brought to life to do the bidding of others. They often bring chaos. The word golem comes from the Hebrew word meaning something that is unfinished. The golem was often seen as a sort of hero to the Jewish people, as they would sometimes save them from death or persecution, or exact revenge when the Jewish people could not. However, a lot of times things go wrong, and the stories tell of the chaos and sometimes tragedy that comes along with the golem.
Yep.
It's like Frankenstein's monster, man. You create this thing, but how are you going to control it?
They literally said this is the backstory, the origin of Frankenstein.
You create something incredible, but what happens when they don't want to listen to you anymore?
Right. Also, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, they also said that.
Well, don't you have to, like, draw, like, symbols in the class to animate them?
Yes. And then you have to wipe the symbol away in some way, destroy it or whatever, to unanimate them.
To kill it?
Yeah, I mean, they're not living-ish.
To unlive them.
Yes.
These things. Okay, So the Talmud tells about a story of rabbis who got hungry when they were on a journey, and they created a baby cow out of the earth and ate it for dinner. And the Jewish mystics said that the rabbis did this plant-based magical thing by permuting language. They used mostly formulas that were in the Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation. So it's kind of like how in Genesis God creates shit.
Yep.
Let there be.
So the word
also a song from
Abracadabra actually comes from Avra-Kadabra.
Abracadabra!
I know. Which is Arabic my Voldemort. For I create as I speak. Which is like a huge, like, all of this backstory.
And God said, let there be. That's what that is.
So they said sometimes, in rare instances, people can give life into matter and inanimate objects and shit. Give it a soul. Which is essentially
what, alive, I guess.
Kind of, yeah. That's essentially what they do with the golem. They kind of, like, give them a soul and animate them in that way and then erase them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not nice.
Yeah. It's sad.
But is it really a soul?
Apparently.
I can get super hippity-dippy with this. We're not going to go there.
That's just one of the ways they explained it. So, I guess the Rabbi Judah Lau of Prague, who's known as the Maharal, in the 16th to early 17th century, he created a golem to defend the Jewish community from anti-Semitic attacks. But the golem eventually grows violent, as they are wont to do.
Yeah.
And the person has to destroy it, like he had to do. So, allegedly, this golem is still in the attic of this place I can't say in Prague, and he can still be reactivated if he needs to be.
Damn, ooh. I was just in Prague. I need to find it.
You
can see some clocks.
The clock was under repair. Whenever I was there, I was pissed off. They had this just, like, computer screen in front of it to show what it would have looked like. I'm like, seriously? Ooh. Just cover it up with everything else. Like, every single fucking opera house. Every single city's opera house was under some sort of reconstruction, or it was closed.
I know, when I go to Paris this summer, Notre Dame's still going to be under restoration.
Well, I was in Prague. I was in Budapest. Vienna. Nuremberg. All of them. Couldn't go to them. Pissed off. Ugh.
But this idea that something, this spark of life mm-hmm. that you create, essentially, when you're not supposed to, can often turn destructive. It's a big theme in all of, you know, their mythology. It's that anxiety, the power of life is so, you know, strong that it can bring both good and bad.
Yeah.
So, next we have Lilith, the woman of the night. Mm. So, in some stories, Lilith is a beautiful demon who appears at night and seduces men while they're dreaming. She can't have children of her own, so she steals babies right out of their cribs.
Oh,
in other mythology, joy. Lilith was created from the earth by God to ease Adam's loneliness. Yep, we'll get there, don't you worry. Lilith was Adam's first wife. However, Lilith wasn't feeling this whole be Adam's plaything bit, so she and Adam fought all the time until Lilith had enough and spoke God's true name like a boss-ass bitch, which is apparently 42 fucking letters long. Anyway, which gave her powers and allowed her to fly away.
Rumpelstiltskin.
So I was looking up daggers on Etsy, and I found a replication of the Rumpelstiltskin dagger.
It was too good of a bit.
Yeah.
Brooke and I acknowledge that we're going to hell.
Sorry,
all the time,
everyone. So. Rumpelstiltskin is a whole name situation. It was funny, okay?
I appreciated it.
Thank you.
I'll save you a seat next to me in hell, okay?
Okay.
So after Lilith
we know
dipped,
I'm dying first. I'm barely making it through right now.
So save me a seat then.
Okay.
But we're going ninth circle, right? Like, it's colder there.
Yeah, thank God.
Ugh, I don't do cold.
I prefer cold to heat. Can't take your fucking skin off. You can add some layers.
I can be Nikki.
Nikki don't always cut it, boo. Anyway, so after Lilith dipped out, she chilled in the cave for a bit where she fucked some demons and popped out some demon babies. And this pissed off God and his angels. So three of God's angels found her and commanded her to go back to Adam, or they'd start taking out 100 of her hellspawn a day. And Lilith was having none of their shit, so she told them no. She's portrayed as a demoness, a personification of lust, and a murderer of children. It said she goes out at night in search of men to seduce to help her breed more demon spawn. The legends say the only way to get rid of her is, if you ever encounter her, is by saying, "Out, Lilith. Lilith in the name of God, and in the name of the three angels sent after you. Sinoy, Sansinoy, and Samangalov. I don't fucking know. To remember the vow you made, that when you find their names, you will cause no harm. So that's Lilith. And then the last one is just me making a point back to that one time in a previous episode where I talked about my history professor who was like, Leviathan, a sea monster? Ha ha ha, are you fucking with me? Behemoth and Leviathan, bitch! Earthly beast and a sea monster! Mm-hmm. Eat shit! Sea monster.
The Leviathan!
It was a reasonable answer. Anyway, they're primeval monsters. They're powerful and huge. That's all I got, folks.
I always think of Supernatural when I think of Leviathan and Castiel taking on all of them, and he's just like, Leviathan! I'm like crawling around in his skin.
I don't think of that season.
I mean, everything that after season five dick. Is shit, so.
Dick.
Yeah, Colin and I started watching it, and we're only watching the season five.
Yeah, season five has some gem of some episodes. Everything before that is like good quality shit. I'm trying to make it through season 15 right now. Slow going.
12 or 13. But
yeah, I watched a lot, but Colin and I are stopping at 5. Yeah. Nothing against my boys, but it's just the storyline ends.
We talked about this last weekend. Yeah. We were like, I'll watch for the boys.
Oh, yeah.
But the storyline afterwards, not here for it.
Yeah. I'm also going to take a pause before mine so we can get more wine because I want to pop.
Mm. Okay.
This is a 2016 Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. From the Galilee region.
She's gonna bust it open on air.
And we're gonna bust it open. I really hope that this is as good as a pop as the white. Because
bust it.
Burn. Yeah, are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Ooh!
That was a good one.
It was a good one. Good. It wasn't as good as the white. The white, like, resonated.
It did. We were in the other room
and
we were like,
ooh,
damn.
Ooh, nice pop.
Oh, yeah. Where's your brush?
It's in my room. We'll do it later. Okay. But it's bad.
Okay. I'm not going to pour quite yet. I'm going to set this up in the other room because...
I like it when it pours, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, don't worry. We'll get it.
I like that. It's a good sound.
ASMR.
Wine ASMR. Oh, my God.
I'm here for that one.
I'm here for
Are we ready for some ASMR here?
Oh, you just missed me doing some good wine when you were gone.
Oh.
We're going to make this a thing. Tune in next week for 45 minutes of just wine and ASMR.
This is the point where I say that just made me wet, and Colin goes, ew!
I'm just gonna set this over here for y'all.
As you were talking at the beginning, I was just thinking, it's been a minute since we've done wine.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it smells so jammy.
Oh, I love a good jammy wine.
Trying to decide how much I can have before I'm sick. Oh, look! They have it in Hebrew.
Yeah. It is truly Israeli wine. Right? It smells delicious.
Oh my god, it smells like Christmas, which is ironic.
Yeah, it's really spicy.
Happy Hanukkah Christmas. Thanks. I don't think I'll get sick, but it smells lovely.
It has like dark cherry, a touch of raspberry with a little bit of blueberry and a lot of blackberry in there.
Yeah. It smells lovely.
Lots of spice. It's probably going to need to open up a little bit. It's a 2016, so it shouldn't be too bad.
It's nice. It smells really good.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's very herby.
Mm. Herbaceous. Thank
you. Can I just cut out the other bits and just leave in the ASMR whispering bits? In the regular recording, they're going to be like, what the fuck is happening? I'm not going to note that we said it was... I'm just going to leave it in there.
A touch of petroleum.
That's... not this one.
Oh no, but you missed
That's
my
Riesling.
Bit. When I was gone.
Oh yeah.
I gave a lot of just like $1 million words in there. A lot of like trigger words and they made no sense. It was just random order.
It was a buttery
I was like buttery Chardonnay. I was like Sauvignon Blanc. I was just saying random words for our wine ASMR.
Oh yeah.
And I kept going. We could string it together. I think it'd be pretty fun.
Yeah. Just have like a 5-minute segment.
Like
it is pretty nice though.
I'll get there.
One day.
Mm. It tastes sandy.
It is pretty earthy.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it tastes like I'm licking a river rock. But I mean, don't dislike it.
That is a flavor profile that you can get from these. You don't have to. You can.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm getting from it. But it's nice.
Some slate, almost.
licking a river rock.
Or chalk.
Which I've done.
Like old-fashioned chalkboard.
I don't fuck with
those. It's not quite blackboard kind of deal.
You said slate. I said old-fashioned chalkboard.
Yeah.
They're made of slate.
But it's not quite as chalky.
Before they put chalk to it, then Carrie.
Okay, thank you.
Don't lick blackboards.
Please
it's
don't
COVID.
Lick things
it's COVID. In COVID. You shouldn't do it even outside of COVID, for fuck's
sake. I don't
care
near as much outside of COVID, Brie. Right. But during COVID, I care a lot. And I teach in a school, so this is something I have to deal with.
Can you imagine elementary schools, though? Like,
nope.
Those fuckers put their boogers on and
we had to close the school. We had to close the school this week.
My friend Ashley has COVID.
Mm-hmm. I know
Ashley. She also just moved into a house. Yeah. All right, are we ready?
Spooks.
We'll ever be.
Spooks. These are more just legends, because, as I mentioned earlier, it's a lot more monster-based and
it
less,
was a
like...
Mash.
It was a monster mash.
A monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
It was a mash.
Brie and I made eye contact for that whole thing.
Ow.
Yeah, we the monster freaks over here.
Yeah, yeah. Hey.
Wah, wah, wah. Says the girl who's literally been, like, freaking out over Twilight every night. I forgot how much I loved it.
I almost said something that I remembered. He doesn't listen anyway.
Yeah.
Colin? Oh, and someone else. Never mind. Someone else does. I was going to say, I almost said something that I can't say because. We will discuss later the text that I received today.
Oh!
No. Oh. I wish it was half that fun.
It's from me. I'm so fun, baby.
So I was like, on the one hand, she'll understand, but on the other hand, she'll be like, you bitch.
I'm so fun.
I wish it was half that fun.
Well, I think my stories are pretty fun this week, because they're all...
Mine's not. He's a serial rapist, so have fun with yours before we get to mine.
Yeah, we'll have fun and drink during mine, because mine are pretty light.
Good.
They're also in Jerusalem. So,
like a nice Israeli salad.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be my new phrase. It's light like a nice Israeli salad. Like 8 times. With like a weird accent that's like kind of Midwestern and kind of New Jersey.
Midwesterners do not sound like that. Shut the fuck up.
I said kind of. I don't really know what it is, but it sounds like a nice salad.
Yeah, so this is not like a nice salad. Our first stop is the Valley of Hinnom, also known as Gehenna. Which is on the eastern side of Jerusalem.
Also known as Hymen.
As in, no.
Yep. Hence the face I made. Unfortunately, listeners, you could not see my face.
That thing that we pop.
Hey-oh. Anyway, so the name...
It's not ASMR appropriate.
Allegedly means hell, but I couldn't verify that via Google. Granted, Google like also crashed this week.
It did. It was really fun teaching online.
Yeah.
We got an email. I was like, Google is down worldwide. And I was like, well, we're not doing anything, apparently. Yeah. Love that for us.
Yeah. So while I could not verify that Hinnom meant hell, I could verify that the word for hell in the Quran is Yahannum, meaning the fire.
Ooh,
and it was
that's a good name.
Derived from Gehenna.
Have you ever read any of the Quran?
No.
I've had part of the Quran read to me.
I read it.
Yeah, I've had, like, blurbs throughout my life.
Oh, no, I read, not a significant portion, but, like, a portion.
When I was in
my
Egypt.
Middle Eastern
advanced
women's class thing. History.
Yeah, almost started going into...
Oh, my sweet husband's putting away laundry. You can hear him aggressively shedding my dresser. But I shouldn't be upset because he's putting away laundry.
It also makes everything smell really nice.
Yes.
I love the smell of fresh laundry. Anyway, the fire. Gehenna. It's believed that the Valley of Hinnom is where many derive their inspiration of their depiction of hell. Mm-hmm. In fact, the valley appears in the Bible. 2 Kings 23:10. He defiled Tophet, which is in the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, so that no one would make a son or daughter pass through fire as an offering to Molech. Molech?
Oh, he's
Molech?
A demon, isn't
Molech?
He?
Yeah.
Molech is a demon.
Yeah, he is a demon.
He was also an idol at that time.
Makes sense.
Well, yeah, because then the Catholics are like, not the Catholics, but during the Reformation, like, idols are bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then in Jeremiah 19:16.
With idols. Give us a finger any day.
I need to switch to that right now. No.
It's like
no,
a thing.
No, I know. Relics yeah. And yeah. And saints.
Jeremiah 19:16, therefore the days are surely coming, says the Lord, when this place shall no more be called Tophet or the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom, but the Valley of Slaughter.
Eek. Slaughter's never a good word.
So it's talking about literally the slaughter of pagan children.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah, it's rough. Some theologians stated this kind of child sacrifice back to 700 BC. But it's been known as a burial ground since way back further and all the way through the Byzantine era.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been a structure nicknamed the House of Bones that was a burial place for crusaders that died in Israel.
Yeah, but the crusaders had it coming, all of them.
Oh, every single one absolutely.
Of you. I'm sorry, you're all dumb. Even the kids. And that's the worst one.
I was just
going
to go with the kids because I talked about that in one of my stories.
Yeah.
Stop crusading, everyone. Stop it.
Yeah. Of course, the Torah does not condone communicating with the spirit world, and there isn't really a clear picture of what happens when you die. So I wonder how many stories of people have not been reported.
Okay, so here's my thing. In every religion, every fucking one, I'm going to hell. Who's coming with me?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, please help me.
Yeah.
What?
It's an Eminem song. Oh. I think my dad is going crazy, but also, like, for going to hell.
Colin's
going
to, like, bust through that door and finish it for you. Like the Kool-Aid man.
But, yeah, so I'm wondering how many stories there are from people experiencing things in that area but haven't reported it or have had to deny it.
Spooky.
Because.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because it's against their religion.
Uh-huh. And so in modern days, there are towns and cities throughout the valley, but there are some stories of apparitions, possessions, and exorcism where flames have shot out of a girl's toes.
No, not the toes.
The toes.
Not the toes. Please. I literally do the true crime section. The only thing that's ever bothered me on this podcast is the toes.
Yeah, so that was a specific story. It was like in the 1970s, and the neighbors.
Oh,
like,
God, 70s toes? Oh, yeah. You know she had athlete's foot.
Yeah. But the neighbors were totally peeping and were
totally.
Like.
Totally. Okay, I'm fine with the toes now. I gotta get one in.
But yeah, they were peeping and saw flames shooting out of toes, so that was great.
Everyone else is screaming, and I'm just like, whoop, whoop, like, gagging in the background.
Me lighting a cigarette.
Well, it looks like my 70s. Time has come, boys.
Shit, I'm going out. My toes are on fire. You know I'm going to go out like that. Shit. I don't smoke, but I would for that occasion.
I would if I could light it with my toes. Not like a lighter with my toes, but like actual flames in my nail, like a fungus just growing out of
it.
Ew!
I mean,
it's gross. It's always been gross!
Demons coming out of your toes is less gross than fungi.
It's like ingrown toenails, and like all of a sudden it like pops it straight, and the demon's like, ah! You know those ingrown toenail correctors? They look like torture devices, and they're like, ee, and the demon's like, free!
So my bitchy roommate in college. She freshman year had to get her ingrown toenails like corrected and whatnot, mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, I remember her telling me about it. And they're like, yeah, they had to like stick this thing underneath my toenails and like keep it there for like 30 minutes so that way the skin could swell up underneath it. And I was like, oh,
yep. First I off, do it myself.
See, Poe people right. Just stick toilet paper under that hoe or something to lift it up.
Yeah. I just get I have like a knitting needle that I just use. Well, dip it in some Listerine, shove it up there. It's fine.
Yeah, she was also just a terrible person, and
maybe the demon was hurting her toes.
She deserved the toe torture.
Mm-hmm. Torture.
Like, we were still friends after that for a little while, and she was a bitch to pedicurists.
She really got herself in a jam.
Yeah, she was a bitch.
Toe jam. All right, continue your monster talk.
I hope she gets athlete's foot.
Ew.
She's a terrible person.
Athlete's foot.
Yeah.
One time we were at Walmart, and my sister, being the bitch that she is, we were walking by, like, the pharmacy area, and she's like, oh! Like, shouts it as we walk by people. Oh! You need to get something for your bunions? And I was like, fuck you, you fucking
bunions hurt. Bunions are like they a do. Real problem. Bunions aren't actually gross because it's just something that happens. Athlete foot is something you get to yourself.
I know. Yeah. But she was just like being ridiculous and like saying I had all these nasty feet problems in front of other people.
Oh, feet are so gross. I hate them.
Fucking bitch.
I hate feet. I literally, if someone touched my foot, I literally would like swoon for a long time. And if someone touched me with their foot, I literally would like get like hot and cold and like sweat.
You kept bumping my foot last week when we watched Beetlejuice and I was like, is she freaking out right now? I
know. Yeah, I've gotten better. Since I've gotten RA and I need someone to like massage my joints, I've gotten over it.
Yeah.
Because I have to or else I can't walk. Yeah. But like before that, I literally would get like a sheen and I would like get like tunnel vision if someone touched me with their foot. That's how bad it was. Yeah. I hate feet. They're disgusting.
Just chop them off.
I'm sorry.
They're all like bones and ligaments and they like move.
So is your whole body.
No, but like I have enough fat to hide it everywhere except for there.
Hands. Like,
yeah, your hands are just as bad. Hands too. All you wanted to do on Zach's birthday was hold my hand.
Okay, holding mine too. So aw, I'm so sweet. I'm not touchy feely though.
No, it was weird.
Really weird. That's how we knew you were super drunk.
Fuck yeah.
Don't touch my feet. Don't touch me in general, except for apparently when I'm drunk.
Oh yeah, you kept hugging Zach.
But I have to instigate. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in Jerusalem, there is the Jerusalem District Health Office, as a city has. But before that, it remained vacant for 10 years.
Spooky.
Dybbuk.
Not quite a Dybbuk. Before it was turned into an office space, the building was the House of the Dead Groom. So the legend goes that in 1882, two wealthy Arab Catholic families had arranged the marriage of their children and as a gift, bought them this house in Jerusalem. However, on the...
She wanted to unpack there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, that's so fucking interesting.
That's why I tried to go slow when I was speaking it. On the day of the wedding, the groom mysteriously died.
It was poison!
So instead of calling off the wedding and preparing their son for burial, they got him dressed up and ready to go to his wedding.
No!
Ew. Rick and Mortis is going to sit and that bitch going to be like...
Well, they didn't half-ass it either.
Oh my God, the weekend that Bernie'd him? They put on sunglasses and they're like, I do!
Yeah.
Ew!
So they had him...
Did this bitch know?
The bride didn't.
It didn't talk about her. It was just... I'm getting there.
Is she going to get lots of money? Is that why she's like, I do, honey?
I know, I was like...
Probably.
Okay, fair.
It said... Okay, I'm going to get that dude if I'm getting money.
Right. It said that they were wealthy families, but it didn't mention a whole lot about her because fucking patriarchy.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so they didn't half-ass it. They had him paraded in for the ceremony and went as far to have him dance. Their first dances.
Literally Weekend at Bernie's. They just have like strings on him. He's like...
Yeah.
I shouldn't be laughing. A man died.
Yeah. After it was discovered that he was deceased, obviously, the party was over and they vacated the house.
How long did it take?
They're like halfway through the cake. They're like,
I think it was during the dances that they figured out who was dead.
Well, yeah, I would fucking hope so, at least.
I mean, you can kind of get away with a sway.
To hold me down.
That's what I was trying to sing and I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Yeah,
there are no strings on me. Hey,
one of them mentioned like his shoe fell off and no one noticed, and they were like, why is he going around with his shoe off? And they were like, oh shit, he's dead.
Also, why wouldn't you tie that fucker tight as hell? Because he has no circulation.
They clearly have never seen Weekend at Bernie's. There are steps that you have to take.
I super glue those fuckers on at that point.
Or just say, oh no, he feels ill, the wedding's already over, and then be like, he died.
Yeah.
I like how we're considering this as a real option.
Right.
This is not a real option. Don't do this.
Do not marry dead people.
That's weird.
Unless it's a Twilight vampire, and then go for it.
Yeah, daddy.
Yeah, I always kind of had a thing for Emmett.
No.
I like the big brawny ones.
We literally talk about you every day and about how disappointed we are in you. Colin literally be like, what the fuck? fuck is wrong with Carrie? How can she be Team Jacob? Jacob's an asshole. He gets so mad and I love it. Because me too. Because clearly Edward is better, but we're not going to talk about it.
No.
He gets so mad. It's amazing. He's very invested in these books.
He talked about it last weekend too, and he was the one who brought it up, and I was just like,
oh yeah, he's in deep. He's in deep.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Eclipse was my favorite.
Yeah, that's what just, we're on.
Yeah. The tent scene.
Oh. Ew.
No. I'm about it.
Not Team Jacob.
I mean, I'm Team Taylor Lautner with his shirt off.
Bingo.
I'm Team Alice.
Oh, that too.
Have you seen my hair?
Alice is the best character. Alice and Charlie.
This was modeled for Alice.
It's really funny because in Red Riding Hood with Amanda Seyfried, whatever the fuck her last name is, I can never say it right.
Seyfried.
Yeah.
She's from Allentown. Well, actually, she's from Bethlehem, but not the Jerusalem one. Not the Bethlehem in Israel, the Bethlehem in Philadelphia.
Tie-ins. Bam.
Mm. Boom.
But Charlie plays the werewolf in that, so it's funny. I saw that and I was like, ha, yeah.
Anyway. So, vacated the house. It remained empty for 10 years until the municipal hospital began to occupy it. It's believed that the groom still haunts this building.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
With one shoe on, apparently.
I would, too, if I got married and didn't actually, like, get to enjoy my wedding because I was fucking dead. So, Bertha Spafford Vester.
That's an unfortunate name.
That is.
Yeah.
A real unfortunate name.
So, did I tell you what my parents were going to name me?
Mm-mm.
Bessie.
Ew.
Well, and I actually had like a second aunt. I don't know.
But family member. An aunt named Bessie. That's different than you being named Bessie. Yeah.
No. Not her. Like her name's not Bessie. Her name's Cornelia.
Oh.
Hey, that's Cornelia. Cool. You don't listen to this because you'd probably faint. No, but she found writings from Bessie about her life, and I like have saved them and I want to document them. They're really cool. Oh man, I could do that in Minnesota and just be like, this is my great great grandmother. Anyway, yeah, they wanted to name me Bessie Estelle.
I like Estelle.
I'm keeping Estelle. I told Zach if we have a daughter, her name's Estelle.
I like that a lot.
But yeah, Bessie.
My mom's new puppy's name is Stella.
An older name.
Yeah.
As a 20th/21st century child.
Bess Zach has no choice.
Like, Bess is better than Bessie when you're young.
Yeah, now we're not keeping Bessie. That.
If your name is Bessie,
super sorry.
Hey, what's happening?
Hope you're doing okay.
What's up?
If your name's Estelle,
love you.
We're going to steal your name. Anyway, so Bertha.
Ooh.
No, Bertha Spafford Vester. She was the daughter of the American colony founders, spent some time in Jerusalem, and she recounted the tale of the House of the Dead Groom in her memoir, My Jerusalem. It's a long quote from this, so just bear with me. It was being built about the time we arrived in 1881 as the future home of a couple about to be married. The young man was the only son of an Arab Roman Catholic family who lived near our home in Harriet Esside. Sure. Before the wedding took place, he died. The mourners gathered in the room where the dead man was propped up in a chair and his lovely young bride was brought up to him, gorgeously decorated with jewels and flowers and wearing an elaborate brocade dress and the customary wedding veil. The joy shout was raised by the mourners or guests, and his mother danced before the couple with a lighted candle in each hand, the traditional dance of the mother and relatives performed before a bridal pair. "It is my duty to dance," she reported, and the guests joined in. "Yes, it is your duty." As she finished her dance, she tore her clothes, gave the terrible death cry, and snatched the veil from the bride's face, and the corpse was laid in the coffin and the funeral ceremony held. The mother came home shaken by the spectacle. The violent demonstration of grief evidently killed the mother, for she soon died after. So one more house stood unfurnished many years in Jerusalem.
There is so fucking much. What?
Yeah.
What?
Woof.
Because she was like keening and it like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the keening. I know. That's the whole thing. But what? That's a lot the fuck.
Yep.
Well, she probably went a little berserk. Her kid just died. He was
really
young.
Yeah, but then she like.
Yeah.
Went on with the charade of a fucking wedding and then ripped your clothes off.
Okay, we are not allowed. to judge grief.
Oh, I'm not judging.
Just processing.
It was like ripping off like gallantry.
Yeah.
To become more mourning. I think that's what they mean. Not like she was naked.
Because she was, she was like in wedding attire, which.
Gotcha.
Which for Catholics
is a lot. No, that wasn't judging. Yeah. I was just saying there's a whole fucking lot going on here.
Yeah,
it's. Yeah, she had a really bad day.
Yeah.
Oh, and she had to dance? That's, and like the tradition. Oh.
Yeah, it's.
Rough.
Oof. So anyway, he haunts that place.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of healthcare and the municipal hospital, the Russian hospital and the Jerusalem Municipal Square, different location, is pretty haunted. It's pretty well known. They don't know what haunts it because they refuse to, like, dig into it. Anyway, it was built in 1860. The Russian compound is one of the oldest districts outside of the old city walls. Part of this was the hospital. It's a hospital. It's gonna be haunted.
Yeah.
The hospital was used for wounded Israeli troops in 1948. What a revolution.
War of Independence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And from there became known as Avi Ha'il, which means father of strength in Hebrew. In 2010, there was an article written by Omri Maniv, who visited the old building. Again, it's long. It's a quote from this little interview, talking about his experiences there. I go with Uziel, who works there, down the steep staircase to a stuffy basement. In the cellar, on the bookshelves, stand black binders that appear to contain various and strange magic spells.
No.
As a whole, the place is reminiscent of a medieval library.
Not a binder. Give me something bound in leather, okay? This is not cheap.
Or human skin or something.
My magic books are bound in something classier than plastic, okay? Brianna, I don't know how you keep your spells in bestiaries.
Okay, I was talking my bestiaries, right? Okay, I was talking about the spell bits, okay? You said no. But also, listeners, sorry, Carrie, just one second. She was noping not to the basement bit, but to the stuffy bit.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I don't do stuffy. Air that bitch out.
For y'all.
Get a dehumidifier, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Preach.
Am I right?
The orchestra director and I share an office, so dehumidify this shit. Gotta get back in my zone.
I hope there are Dorkestra dorks on here that listen.
Did you just call them a Dorkestra?
I was in Dorkestra. I can call it Dorkestra, okay?
I dated a bass player. Does that count?
Your husband used to play violin.
Yeah, but I didn't know him when he played violin.
Well, still, you're married to a former violinist. Anyway, I hope there are Dorkestra dorks that listen to this and appreciate the humidifier bit that you just said about
Thank you
and the orchestra person.
He and I are buds. What's up, Andy? I know you don't listen to this, but I do know that one of our listener has two daughters in the orchestra program. What's up, Susie?
Hello.
Get a little shout out.
Hiya.
I'll tell you to make sure to listen to this because, hey. All right, Uziel claims that the priests are forbidden to enter the building, even for work. The terrifying isolation there gave rise to his dedication to bring in a quorum of 10 guys to perform a rending of garments ceremony for safety's sake.
Are we talking like PPE or are we talking religious garments?
Religious.
Got it.
So he's talking about the priests like not being allowed to go in even for work and then having to go in for like a cleansing ceremony.
Okay.
Continuing on. We ask for forgiveness in all cases, just as it is done before a funeral when preparing the body, cleansing and honoring the dead person. When Jerusalem's municipal square was being built, the workers often objected to working in the accursed building because it was haunted. A rabbi was called in to solve the issue. He said, "The city of Jerusalem is sacred. Let not your hearts be troubled," and conducted prayers there. Security guards are afraid to do late night patrols because they think there are ghosts here, says one worker. There used to be people who didn't want to work here because the building was cursed and had all sorts of diseases. There was one female hospital. Yeah.
That one maybe.
I also just rewatched that episode of Doctor Who season 2 where Ten and Rose go to that hospital in New York.
Oh my god, the cat nurse nuns?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Queens.
So that just reminded me.
And Cassandra? It was like being inside a bouncy castle.
Yes!
Moisturize me. Moisturize me.
Still got it. Bow? I know every word to that hole.
I like this real bumper.
Whatcha? Iconic.
I was in the middle of a quote.
Sorry, but I'm real.
Sorry, I like how all three of us know every word to that episode.
I just love moisturize me. Moisturize me. It's me all the time.
Chip loves the mistress. He strokes the mistress.
So I watched that when I was on Accutane, which is a bitch of a drug. If anyone has ever taken that, I'm so sorry. Stomach. I heard that from here.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, I watched that when I was on Accutane. And I was like, damn, that's me like every 30 minutes.
Moisturize me.
Oh, my face literally cracked.
I know, you told me. I just wanted to clarify that's what you were saying.
Oh, yeah. Continue on, quote. There was one female security guard working here at night, and the alarm sensor went off. She went in, but found nothing. Rumor has it that she left, vowing never to return. Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, so that hospital is obviously haunted, but they clearly did not want to go into it. Literally. All right, our final story tonight. We are rocking at 111 Agrippa Street. There is a business building here named the Eini House.
Heine House?
That's what I was thinking.
E-I-N-I? Eini?
Eini. It's like that Charmin commercial. My Heine, so shiny.
My Heine's clean.
Sorry, people of Israel. Super sorry.
To be fair, we do this to every language we don't speak, and to the languages we do speak. So,
yep.
Here
more
we are.
So to the languages we do speak.
Yeah. So the legend goes that about 50 years ago, it didn't give me a specific date, and I think it's weird that everything is just like several years ago, like 50 years ago.
It adds to the mystery.
It's like, when was this written?
/ they can't substantiate their claim.
Right.
No one adds to the mystery.
Well, I mean, it was when this building was built, so they should know, right?
You would think.
Yeah. Anyway, Rabbi Shalom Sarabi, the head of...
Rabbi!
That's what I thought of. head of a...
No food left.
Man, the lullaby that she sings to... No. Who is that?
You said lullaby. I thought you said the lullaby, and I was like, what's happening? I don't know what that means.
Never mind. I was thinking of Lion King 2 when What's-Her-Face sings to Kovu.
Hush now, my Kovu.
There we go.
No, I'm Sarabi. So
Sarabi! Mm-hmm. Anyway, head of a Kabbalist. Kabbalist?
I think it's like Kabbalist or something.
That's my first
The word is Kabbal, but I don't know what the
yeah.
S does
I'm going
to
say
it.
Kabbalist house of study. Was upset when the building was being constructed because the building would block the rising sun for his morning prayers and would inevitably make him late to his morning prayers.
You just sneeze on my foot! There is so on my foot, Brianna! Free! Ew, I hate feet! Free! I'm so sorry. I should have spit on my foot and I just told you how I hate feet.
The Rona.
I literally did that and you would sneeze. I just inhaled it somehow and I died.
Oh no! Are you okay?
Slow breath. She goes.
Don't die.
I'm so sorry.
We can't deal with more death in here.
Oh my god, it's everywhere.
That's what she said.
I just saw you spit it, so.
Okay, well, normally I swallow.
Okay, both of you.
Hey, guys, she swallows.
Ew!
Oh, gosh, I have witnesses. Oh.
This is supposed to be on Christmas.
We never said it was family friendly.
Also, on Christmas. You think this shit ain't gonna be goody
tooty? No, we are gonna be at my parents' house.
Anyway, so this rabbi. Yeah, he was mad because this building was gonna block his morning sun. I'd be mad too.
Not me,
I'm a He contacted the contractor and basically said, screw you. When the rabbi demanded that they stop construction. So the rabbi put a curse on the building.
Oh Well, shit.
That seems a little petty.
Dishonor on you. Dishonor on your cow.
Oh, yeah. That.
Dishonor on your building. Yeah.
There goes Colin.
That's fine. We're just cross-cultural here. So.
No, I'm saying I misquoted it, but sure.
I just read the name of my person, which is Shlomo, and I just thought to myself, no Shlomo. Because he's evil.
He is evil.
Yep. So, the curse on this building has doomed every business in it to fail. They either went bankrupt or were forced to close, which forced a high turnover rate. This not only affected Einy House, the high turnover rate also caused nearby buildings to struggle to retain tenants. So they were either offices or apartment buildings.
Sucks.
Yep. So, as I mentioned before, it's not a culture to believe in ghosts, but they are really superstitious.
Okay.
So it's a little baffling that an area that's so superstitious with all their medallions and whatnot to ward off curses that they would be falling victim to this curse. Just saying.
It's one guy's decision to curse them. You can't make everyone happy. Especially
like,
in real estate.
they were prepared to
That's
ward
going
off
on some type of merchandise.
Yeah. But they're like prepared to ward off evil. So just why can't you do it to this building? Just saying.
Oh yeah. Like, hang your medallions and shit. Hang
yeah.
your evil eye Mabobber thing. I don't even know if that's this
That's
one.
Not this
This
one.
Rabbi was so. Thorough.
He's anti-evil eye-ifying it.
He knew what he was doing.
That.
He was petty. I told you.
He was petty. He wanted his morning sun.
Sometimes I love a petty bitch, though. They're entertaining.
Me too. That's unless, how we get cursed buildings.
Unless they aim their petty at me. Like, bitch, you fuck with the wrong petty bitch.
Hashtag salty mom.
I'm not allowed to say salty in Carrie's house, apparently, so I said sodium.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Shalom. Okay, so.
See if I can manage to not spit on you.
It means hello.
Please don't choke.
So. I am doing who is known as the Weeping Rapist. Not a funny thing.
No, she was laughing at me because she said don't joke.
I know.
And I said I never choked.
But I started. Now
I
can't laugh.
Because...
So he's an Israeli serial rapist. He's been convicted of one murder, but he is a suspected serial murder. And all around a terrible person. And I'm trying to keep my judgment of the Israeli imprisonment system out of this because they just kept letting him out and he kept doing stuff and they were like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And I'm
Stop
very,
it.
Very upset about it. And it happens here too, so I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
See, he was born in 1949, so he's still alive. He's technically up for parole in 2024.
Fuck you.
Yeah, so
Someone
it's rough.
Kill him.
And so he was born in Hadera, Israel, but he hunted around and his parents actually immigrated from Israel from Egypt right before he was born.
Mm-hmm.
So his name is Shlomo Haliva and he's known as the Weeping Rapist. I'll get into that story. So he's convicted of 7 rapes and 1 murder. He technically has life imprisonment, but they're all willy-nilly with what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Typical. Very typical for all penitentiary systems. Mm-hmm. They don't know. They know he's killed at least one, but they think it could be 5. And if the other bodies they found are connected to him, it's upwards of 10. All in Israel. And he was convicted in central Israel and Haifa. He's suspected of. He was apprehended for the final time in 1983. And I have to say for the final time because they literally kept letting him go.
Yeah.
So he was born right after his parents moved here. He went to school. He studied, went to the Air Force Technical School, and was a paratrooper. In Israel, I think it's mandatory for every male and female to serve some time in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So several victims are young soldiers. And he spent some time as a soldier himself. And the first attack he did was a rape on someone when he was a soldier. She was a Dutch tourist. And she was visiting, and he met her on the way to his parents' house. He volunteered to give her a tour of the old city. They passed an underground tunnel. He tried to rape her. She fought him off and escaped and went on trial and identified him. He apologized to her, and he was sentenced to pay 100 Israeli pounds, so like $100 essentially,
yeah.
And was 2 years probation for attempting to rape a woman.
Yeah.
This was also in 68. So that's pretty standard.
Right.
It's trash, but that's pretty normal.
He didn't actually do it. He just thought about doing it.
He just tried.
Even if he had actually done it, it's 68. Yeah, true. So.
Right.
So in 69, the trial concluded he was literally carrying an Uzi and patrolling as a soldier.
Yep.
He came upon another tourist who was waiting for a ride, and he introduced himself, and he's like, oh, I'm part of the army. I can help you. I can take you to the car left and so that they could go to Tel Aviv together, which is how it plays into Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, I can take you. He's like, I'm in the military. He attacked her in a field. He literally grabbed her by the neck, raped her, and the woman went on to need psychiatric treatment, which, again, in the late 60s, well, of course. But in the 60s, that's a big deal.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Because psychiatric treatment is...
You were supposed to get over that. That's just what happens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she needed medical attention, which is common, and she sought after it.
Yep.
So I hope that they helped her.
Yeah.
He cried after he raped her, which is how he got the name. He said that he had no idea what he'd done. He literally showed her his soldier certificate, escorted her to a bus stop, and left. Yep. So, like, afterwards, he literally was overcome by guilt for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make it okay. But he literally, like, showed her his official name, was not trying to hide who he was, and escorted her to a bus so that she wouldn't get attacked by someone else, which to me is just... I can't understand it. So in August, he met another tourist hitchhiking. He drove her to the bay. He attacked her, raped her, and threatened her with a gun again because he was on patrol.
Mm-hmm.
She spotted him by accident while riding in a taxi and discovered who he was and got the authorities. And so he was charged again.
Good for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she literally saw him when she was riding in the taxi. He was like, that's the man who attacked me, and got him. So he was still on probation. He committed an indecent act against a girl he met in a dark street. He raped her after asking for directions, but she was screaming. And so tenants nearby came to her aid, which is good. Because that normally doesn't happen.
Oh, fight back.
That's why they tell you to yell fire. Because otherwise, no one else is going to fucking help you.
Right.
In 1970, he was sentenced to 7 years. 2 years probation were added to the prison sentence. And then he was released on parole and returned to his parents' home in 1975. So in 76, he was arrested again on suspicion of committing 5 rapes after his release. So within a year.
Gosh.
He escaped from prison custody twice. The first time he asked the guards to go to the bathroom, he ran off and then they caught him. But the guards thought he was pleasant and educated, so he was like super chill, so it's fine.
Hmm.
He was convicted of the 5 counts of rape, sentenced to 22 years imprisonment, and everyone called him the weeping rapist because he would apologize profusely to the... So, in 76, he was arrested on suspicion of rape. He was questioned to rape murders of 2 women, Lenore Benlulu and Arete Yakovi. So, Benlulu was 24, and she disappeared in 76 while hitchhiking in Tel Aviv on her way back home. She was going to her nephew's birthday party.
Aww.
The employees of the bus company were on strike, and there were no buses that traveled from Tel Aviv to the city she was going to.
Aww.
So she was hitchhiking because she couldn't take the bus.
Damn.
To go for her nephew's birthday. So her body was found in a eucalyptus grove.
Aww.
She had been undressed, raped, and redressed, except for her shoes, which were, next to the body, which we see a bunch of rapists do. We don't know why. Her killer had suffocated her with her own scarf and a hairbrush.
Uh-huh.
So he pulled a hairbrush out and made her garrote, and literally garroted her with her own stuff. Her watch ring and purse were missing from the crime scene, but never were, used. So it was, a forensic countermeasure. Yakovi was 23, and she left Haifa, our guy, to travel to go home. Her body was found on November 2nd in an avocado orchard near a junction of the Meg and Michael Junction, naked in a state of advanced decay with several skull fractures. Mm-hmm. So... Haliva confessed to killing Lenore Benlulu, which the first woman, claiming that he provided the police said that he claimed an accurate description of the body's location, but he said that he buried it, which wasn't true, but it was an accurate description. The prosecution ruled that this confession was inadmissible because he had that one thing, and then he later said he was under duress.
Because he said he buried it, but it wasn't buried?
Yes, and they said that it was under duress.
That clever little fucker.
So, but Benlulu's brother was a policeman, and he said that he thinks it was him, even though his confession was considered inadmissible.
Yeah.
So those 2 women are the first 2 bodies that he was found and questioned for. Early Doobie was in 83. So Halva was on prison leave. Okay? Prison leave.
Yeah.
During that period, a soldier, so she's a soldier, Orla Doobie disappeared on November 15th. Her body was found on December 14th, which is today, isn't it?
Today's 15th. Yesterday.
Okay. So she was found yesterday in 83.
Damn.
Naked, lying on her stomach. Her body had been discarded at a chromite processing plant belonging to the Oreo Company. So chromite is an artificial mineral.
Mm-hmm.
And so all her belongings were, like, thrown in, like, a sewage canal near, like, a runoff. Her bra straps were used to strangle her.
That's
which we've
up.
Seen a lot, though.
Yeah.
That's, like, really common. Like, when we did the Boston Strangler, using the pantyhose and stuff, mm-hmm. it's just yeah. taking something that's normal and...
Free the titties.
Yeah.
Bare leg bitches.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna use it against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was tying a knot, and so pathologists assumed she was strangled with it.
Yeah.
She was so decayed that they couldn't find, like, ligature marks. They suspected Halva might have been involved, questioned him. He wasn't considered a serious suspect, but then he was like, oh, but my dad is dying. I need to go see him, and it was denied. Because his dad wasn't dying, and he didn't even really care about his dad. But he asked again, and said, oh, the police officers can come with me. And so they said, okay. So on the trip, he escaped.
Naturally.
Again, but he was recaptured a few days later in Jerusalem. His clothes all had traces of chromite.
Mm.
It's only produced in one place. So he went back to where they found the body.
Yeah.
The fact that it was unique to the Orton Company couldn't be natural. It literally is only found in one spot. So they connected Halva to the crime scene, using it as their primary evidence on trial. So they said that they found this body, and they asked him about the body, but they didn't tell him where it was located, and he went back to where it was located when he escaped from prison. So, like, clearly I did it. So that was the main evidence. In prison interviews, he sounded concerned about the clothes he was wearing and even tried to disrupt proceedings, apparently out of fear the witnesses wouldn't identify his clothing. And then they did a blood test, because they could only do blood tests
right.
at this time, of a sperm, and it matched the blood type found on her body. Which is not an exact science, but it's closer than nothing. For the
right.
80s, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And matching up the,
yeah.
the chemical substance. Like, for forensic evidence in the 80s, that's, like, pretty airtight.
Uh-huh.
So in 91, he was convicted by the district court of murder of Orly and sentenced to life imprisonment. Due to the verdict, Halva contacted Doobie, where they were traveling together on a bus. She was tired, asked the driver to wake her up when they reached her stop. The driver had forgotten to, so Halva, our serial killer, yelled, stop, stop, she needs to stop, and then he walked with her, and they both got their bus card stomped with the same exact stamp at the same exact time.
Aww.
So he literally followed her off the bus and was like, oh, I'll help you walk.
Help me.
And literally, uh-huh. yeah. So he's appealed, and it's been rejected unanimously. He can't. Get out.
Please don't.
Yeah, like, don't let him out.
Well, he hasn't been able to get out, but just wait. So he's up for parole in 2024, but he's also 71. So I don't think it's going to happen.
So, sorry, not sorry, let that motherfucker die before
Oh, yeah. So in the late 60s through the 80s, there is at least 10 bodies of young women found on the coastal highway, which is in between areas he was hunting at. One was a soldier named Rachel Heller. She's only 19. And another one was a British tourist named Jacqueline Smith, who was 24. Halva was a milkman in the prison and was allowed prison leave to do this. But all his files were destroyed, so they couldn't verify when he exactly was on leave to know if he matched up to these murders.
How and why were they destroyed?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I think it was I think it was routine.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that.
No! What?
Imagine before computers. So I think it was like a space thing.
Yeah.
Oh, goddamn.
Yeah, well, thank God we don't have to deal with that anymore. So he was never convicted of these murders. Those were the two women that they could identify, but there was at least 10 bodies found.
Mm.
And a man named Amos Burns was wrongfully imprisoned for her murder, but they later proved that he was not the person involved. Murders were reminiscent of the murder of Orly Doobie, which he is convicted of with
right.
forensics. Mm-hmm. That's the only one he's technically been convicted of. But, and Shlomo was definitely on prison leave at that time. All the victims have been strangled with clothing. Their bodies were moved. Foreign object was inserted into their genitalia.
Mm.
Some of them were stabbed with a sharp object. And two of them, the ones that they were identified, were mutilated with a peeler.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Clearly it was a serial killer, but they couldn't give the exact dates of his prison leave, so they couldn't determine if it was even possible for him to be the culprit.
Mutilated where with the peeler?
It doesn't say.
Because there are psychological implications, so I was just
Yeah. So there's like a bunch of TV shows that say Halava was the Coastal Highway Killer. Either way, if it wasn't him, there was definitely another active serial killer who killed at least 10 women.
Yeah.
He was using that as a dumping site, but if he was working as a milkman, he'd have a car and he could throw people off.
Yeah.
And so they think it was him, but they can't even consider him because they don't have what dates he was on prison leave. He never confessed or apologized for his actions, which is weird for, well, I don't know. Confessing is something that I feel like he would do, because serial killers tend to like to do that.
Yeah.
But he also wept after he...
That's true.
So...
He even denied that he was in Doobie's killing, and he revealed details only the killer would know, which is backed up by prison informers who claim he's bragged about numerous rapes and several murders to them. So prison informants have come forth, but he won't say anything.
Yeah. That I can see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that show, Shadow of Truth, the investigation files were reopened, but everything led to dead ends, and there was nothing that they could do. There was no evidence, so they had to shut the case again. So he's serving a life sentence, and he is expected to be released on parole in 2024. So we can only hope this motherfucker dies before 2024. At least one murder, possibly three, possibly 10, possibly 13. Mm-hmm. So there's like all of his rapes that he's definitely convicted of. And then one murder that he's been convicted of, but another murder that's very, very similar that they just didn't have forensic evidence on.
Right.
And then there's the additional 10 that are slightly different area,
mm-hmm.
but are kind of like a more, quote, refined version of his plan,
yeah.
his motive, how he likes to do things. But regardless,
he was perfecting his craft.
There were 13 women murdered, and... I can only, at least, and countless of people raped, because I'm sure those are the ones who were able to come forward, and I'm sure not all of them were able to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, he's a scumbag.
Yep.
And that other guy, if there is another guy, is also a scumbag, and we hate both of you.
Yep.
Also, I feel like this is a serious argument. You know how, like women's clothing is essentially, like, a design of men to keep women oppressed and other shit like that? Like, heels. Like, and she's the man when they talk about the heels.
Have you ever tried to run away in heels? It's not easy.
No. I love David Cross.
So good.
I'm not wearing heels. Heels are a male invention designed to make the women's butt look smaller. And to make it harder for them to run away.
Have you ever tried to run away in heels? Not easy.
Yes. Okay, so that.
Such a good
but
movie.
Also, women's clothing in general has always been fucking restrictive to the advantage of men.
Yes. So, literally, like, 3 years ago, I posted a video on Facebook that someone else made, but to the point of women's pockets
mm-hmm.
are microscopic or non-existent.
For real? So that men have to carry all the important shit.
Or so that we have to carry purses, which are easier for men to steal.
That too. Mm-hmm. So either you need a man, or you're going to be...
vulnerable.
To men.
Down make women's pockets. Men.
Down
bigger.
With the patriarchy and for Merry real. Christmas to all.
Yes. Please, we're ending it on that.
Well, we hope you enjoyed...
The end of toxic masculinity.
Yes.
We hope you enjoyed your tour of Tel Aviv and your enthusiastic proclamation of feminism.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Follow us on Instagram at Darkside Tour Guides and on Twitter at Darkside Guides. Give us a like on Facebook at Darkside Tour Guides. Visit the blog at darksidetourguide.wordpress.com or email us at darksidetourguides@gmail.com.